I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hola, fanáticos de los Colorado Rapids, y bienvenidos a Holding the High Line con Rapino y Peri Rojo. Hoy es lunes 8 de abril 2024. Me llamo Mateo Pollard. Sábado fue espectacular. Los muchachos en vino tinto no perdieron contra Club Internacional de Fútbol Miami. Nosotros vimos un gol y asistencia de Lionel Andrés. Messi, Messi. Pero ahora Cole Bassett es la pulga de la familia. Pero sí, pero no. Pero sí, pero no. Dame más gasolina, la pulga. Damas y caballeros, mi co-anfitrión, Rabino Marcos Bueno Hombre.
I think that's my cue. I did really poorly in high school Spanish, although I have made my way through Guatemala all in Spanish, so I understood most of that. Nice job, Matt. Way to go. There is not much for me to say on this podcast. I am just holding your bag this week because you were in the presence of greatness. You touched the face of God, or the at least stood in a building in the same space as him, and probably were no more than 30 feet away from him at different moments. So this is all about you, Matt. This is all about you.
I was at one point, I'll say within 50 feet of him, Mark, and I'm not sure that I was supposed to be, but as we've both have experienced in press matches, attending football games as press, that having the credential and then walking with conviction, like you know where you're going and you don't need to be checked, you've been here before, can get you a lot of places, and or at least have people not immediately questioning or double checking to see if you're supposed to be there. I'd encourage you listeners, if you have not listened to it yet, I posted about 25 minutes of audio of me recording myself throughout the trip to Miami and to Fort Lauderdale to become a godfather to my now godson, Tomas, and checking out the Inter Miami game. So for those of you who like the inside baseball side of things or want what the actual location, atmosphere, more of an instant reaction, incoherent rambling of someone who was caffeinated and hyped and exhausted, Mark, like I was in just an absolute state of exacerbation, Mark, just to, you know, in terms of just football games and soccer matches, that I've just been completely exhausted afterwards, but also enamored in like the experience of what that was like to watch and then try and cover it and then share stories behind it. It was absolutely fantastic. Absolute one of the top privileges that I've gotten in the 7 seasons of this podcast, in the 2016 to now, covering this team, obviously. And at most there are, I know I said in the parking lot afterwards, there were maybe 5 games that were in there, or 4 games in the same character as this, Mark, but I feel pretty confident. The only games that I've covered at this point that I could say from an atmosphere and experience and a, you know, transcendent out-of-body experience that are of that same ilk, I would say, are the 2 USA-Mexico finals that I've been to, the Pidsgiving, which is the best Rapids game atmosphere significance-wise that I've been to, and then the Feyenoord match, which is, for me, you know, one of the top, you know, there's bigger stadiums as well, and going to a Man City game would be spectacular, Mark. I do not think the atmosphere and the ambiance of City Stadium, the Etihad, the Emirates, yeah, I always confuse them, is anything to hype. But so to witness all of that, Mark, and then to you know, I am a, listeners, I don't know if I've said this multiple times, but just to make clear, I went to the University of Miami for undergrad. If I had an Eastern Conference MLS team, it was going to be Inter Miami. I was, you know, you could have asked me in 2016, Matt, are you going to try and go to and cover the first ever Inter-Miami Colorado Rapids game? Whenever that is, I would have told you yes. No, I had this on my bucket list even before Inter-Miami said when they were playing. I had it before they even had a stadium plan. I had it before they renovated Lockhart Stadium, now Chase Stadium. I had that before they even played Messi. I was always going to this game, Mark. I was always going to enjoy this game. The one question was it going to be a 9 out of 10 or an 11 out of 10. And so to get to witness and see Messi play and then also not totally covered as a fanboy because he completely walked over the Rapids and got a draw, absolutely fantastic. Mark, what questions do you have for me as a fellow supporter reporter about what the experience was like from a press box and media standpoint against La Familia?
Well, having done these away games many times, I think the experience for the reporter is similar to the experience for a fan. So how did you rate their Fort Lauderdale Stadium? How did you rate kind of the physical setting of all that? And then, of course, like, how does, I mean, very, like, most of us, the stadium experience and the physical experience transcends the kind of like game experience, but this is a game where like no stadium can hold the energy or kind of stand it, put a candle to the player and some of his supporting cast. Like, how does the Fort Lauderdale Stadium rate against? Is it worthy of the GOAT himself?
Blunt answer, no, Mark. And I think we have to remember that this was always going to be a temporary venue. You know, Inter Miami, David Beckham, they dumped in, I don't know if it's $100 million. I don't know how much money they dumped into it, Mark, but you know, this is very much a venue that they are existing in temporarily. Every single stand that exists is like metal bleacher scaffolding level and everything. In terms of like from ground level up, the amount of concrete in this stadium is not a whole lot. And so we also have to remember that they rebuilt this stadium in the backdrop of then preparing for a season, 2020, which then turned into COVID. And so now if you think about if we had gone to the architects, the engineers, and the construction managers, Mark, for the people who designed, laid out, and revamped this arena and said, like, as soon as you open it, there's going to be a global pandemic and nobody's going to a game for a year, year and a half, and then you're going to sign one of the greatest players in the world to where you could have 40,000 people willing to pay $100 for tickets and you do not have the capacity. That then is the problem statement that I would just present them with, Mark, and the result that, and the answer they would come back with is nothing like what they are dealing with right now.
Yeah. So, that's a great answer that you understood. You understand the problems that went into the planning of the stadium by you, it's a sympathetic read from an intelligent perspective.
Yeah. But so the way that there's it's a long walk, Mark. It is 10 to 20 minutes, I think, for most fans if they're parked in the yellow lot. Being in the media, I get special privileges, and so I parked across the street. So I was 200 feet, maybe, crossing just one road that was blocked off, you know, at the start of the game in order to get to the actual press area. But then, you know, you've got to walk to get to the stadium. And with the modular design, Mark, it's sectioned off. So it's like, it's not like DSG where you can do a lap around the stadium outside the stadium. You can do a lap around the stadium once you're in the stadium. You can't walk between stands very easily, if that makes sense. So I got up to the press box and I saw somebody who I knew from the Rapids. I asked where the away fans were and they said 127, which is, I think, the south end of the stands. It would have been to my right. The only way for me to get there, Mark, would be I'd have to invade the pitch, which surprise I wasn't going to do, or I'd have to completely exit the media area and then go around and then go through the fan entrance. And I wasn't sure. I probably could have gotten away with it, but that's not something that I wanted to do. And there wasn't a whole lot of time. So you are sectioned off. There is not a lot of co-mingling with people in different sections. If you're in the fancy VIP seats where the camera angle is from, where the benches are, where the press area is, you're in a very nice section. And Mark, there are very good high school football stadiums, not in the states of Texas or Ohio, that actually from like the how we get into the stadium and what the aesthetics are as good or better than what you have until we get to the fact that all of the seats were pink. Now that I know where I'm going, Mark, I wouldn't have had any confusion from a media standpoint, but there's a lot of intermixing in terms of where you go to pick up your credential, how you go through the security. Security was fine. Guardian did not give me any trouble, Mark. I would say they're slightly more forgiving, given that they have security around the one of the two most famous players right now in the world. They're relatively chill relative to what I've heard Argus people be like with some members of the fan and some members of the press, certainly for the first game of the season this year. But then you're commingling with the fans. You know, you walk through kind of a utility area in the southeast corner of the stadium. You get to the same area that the ticketed spectators in the main stand would go to. And then you go through this fancy entrance that is normally for like club seat people. The players walking in, there were a bunch of the little kids, the mascots out there when I got up to the elevator. And then you go up to the third floor where the press area is, and it's all press and just technical people. So I saw Wayne Brandt, I saw Porrick Smith. The actual press area, Mark, it's two very narrow and not a lot of wiggle room rows of say 30 to 40 seats or so, for the main, press area, and the food area is relatively small. We got some rice and beans, there was some meat, and then we had a very well-stocked cooler with coconut water and Coke Zero and everything. So those were two things that they have that DSG didn't have. Cookies were really good, Mark. Cookies, you will remember the lady who brings the cookies out at halftime. Those cookies were on par, albeit smaller portions. People were relatively nice in terms of the media that I interacted with, the staff that I interacted with, and the security people. A mix of Spanish and English. As someone who went to the University of Miami and lived in Florida for 4 years, I was used to that. I could see where a gringo who knows how to say, hola, ¿dónde está la biblioteca?, would have some trouble with some of the staff in terms of understanding anything more than a hand motion or whatever. So for a temporary stadium, I thought it was totally fine. In terms of the press area, they're doing what they can. The angles I don't particularly care for. So similar to DSG, how you kind of have to be standing the whole game. Otherwise, in the outdoor press box, you are, you know, kind of sitting at the little kids table and you can't see like the front quarter of the field as well. It's very tight to where from my seat in the front row of the two, I could barely see the front sideline. So Chris Narmus would have to be, you know, 2-3 yards from the actual field of play for me to see him. You could not see the benches at all. But they're making it work. And the atmosphere was electric. You could see every single time. It's a right. It's a well-understood crowd. They understand soccer. They got up for the game. Certainly Messi got up and started to warm up about 30 minutes into the game, and they got up for that. You know, they got excited about certain players, certainly when they touched the ball and everything. And then the various supporters groups, Mark, they've got a couple different ones, and I can't remember them all, that are in the north stand where they've got the streamers and the drums and everything, and they were very exuberant. From what I could tell, a good mix of, say, like Barra Brava, Spanish language chants, and then some of the more typical stuff that you've seen throughout every single other stadium in MLS that does chants in English. It would have been nice to hear and appreciate and experience that audience a little bit more if the windows to the press box could actually open. But so, Mark, you know, as I told the Miami press officer who used to work for Sporting Kansas City and then also used to work for the league, so she's been to every single stadium. Shout out to Molly, who took the photo of me late in the second half to where I confirmed, Mark, I have a photo of me and Messi, and that is getting hung up and framed at the on the wall somewhere in my condo. But wow. So she mentioned that, you know, she agreed with me when I said outdoor press box from like Memorial Day to Labor Day. Absolutely fantastic. Warm weather, no rain. The roof covers us and everything. Not a whole lot of wind. You know, you get that Colorado sunset in the backdrop. And in February, when it's cold and snowy, it sucks. And if there's a snow classico, it's also miserable. So I'd appreciate the modular design, and hopefully Inter Miami takes that into account, because there's some lovely April days that you have, and certainly at some point they'll have a 4:30 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday in the middle of July, and it will just be 95 degrees and 90% humidity, and if they open the glass for 5 seconds, they're just going to be condensation on all the glass in the press box. So hopefully they take that into account when Miami Freedom Park gets built and everything. But you know, look, the stadium could have been a pile of rubble. It could have been a Red Star Belgrade game. I could have been shanked like I was going to the Old Firm Derby. I got to see Lionel Messi. I got to see the Rapids draw Lionel Messi. Who cares about anything else that happened with the inside baseball stuff?
Nice.
Pink, Mark. I was not prepared for how pink it was. And you saw the polo that I was wearing, that I am currently wearing. They are leaning into that in ways that I don't think they did a very good job of when they launched the club. But
That's great. It sounds like it was a fantastic experience, and we will talk a little bit more about the sporting part of it, and also a little bit about the end of it, which I think it sounds like it was both kind of like a letdown, but also like an understandable letdown. So, but we'll wait to kind of fill folks in on that.
Okay, Mark, shall we get to the actual match itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting because I'm guessing your perspective and my perspective are pretty different. The other thing is that, you know, one of the things that I was at a bat mitzvah bar mitzvah party. So I actually watched the game the next day on delay. So I knew the result. And it's always really fun to watch a game when you know the result, because instead of being all keyed up and amped up about like what happens in the back and forth, you're really just able to like use your tactical brain. And yet I was kind of like fanboying about different aspects of the game, which is thinking about some of our young players who, you know, I watched as Colorado Rapids 2 players, or, you know, I was at their signings, you know, playing mano a mano against Messi and Busquets. So that'll be kind of like, maybe you'll give the same perspective too.
This will be a fun thing for us to do, Mark, because normally we're used to, since you live in Pittsburgh and don't go to a lot of games, normally we're discussing it as two people who watch the match live, one in person, and then one
right on TV.
Yeah, on the stream. This would be a good banter topic if we ever to do a Megapod with the C38 guys, Wanners and Jared, and then the DNVR guys, of the difference between the perspective. Like, this would be worth, like, Mark, us doing data studies of like the one of us intentionally doesn't watch the game to then watch it post and see how it's different, given that everybody else who does a podcast on the Rapids for the most part is watching the game live and in person.
Yeah.
But so in any case, listeners, this past Saturday in Fort Lauderdale, South Florida, the Colorado Rapids played Inter Miami and Lionel Messi to a 2-2 draw. Rapids come out, Mark, and kind of similar to all their other games, start with a lot of energy. They have a lot of the ball. Miami, as we saw, you know, had a very rotated squad. Only two of the 10 outfield players that started against Monterrey in the first leg started. Obviously, you had Messi and Barcelona et al. On the bench, and most of them came on in the second half. But so the Rapids come out, Mark, they're energetic, they're winning set piece opportunities, they're getting the ball into good areas. They're just, like we've seen, not turning that into then quality opportunities actually on goal. Biggest play for me in the opening minutes, Mark, has to be 8 minutes in, Georgi Mihailovic getting stood up by David Ruiz, and having now seen the replay a few days later, I think it's pretty clear Ruiz does not get any of the ball. And he clearly takes out Mihailovic, and that should have been a penalty. Ted Uncle get a Ted Uncle. I don't know how VAR didn't look at that. If there is anything in there, maybe you can kind of look, Mark, and from the angle see that Mihailovic takes a slightly heavy touch, and then obviously the ball gets away from him, but it gets away from him because he gets tackled to the ground and stops moving, and the ball keeps moving. So that should have been a penalty for me. But moving on, Kevin Cabral, in a similar play just a minute later, appears to get taken down as possibly the last man for a dog-so situation with David Ruiz as well. Replay pretty clearly showed that Ruiz did not get any of the ball, but there also wasn't any contact, and Cabral went down early. A couple set-piece opportunities, Mark, for both teams. I thought Julian Gressel had a couple really good looks on goal. Andreas Maxu had a really good clearance on the back post on a set-piece opportunity for Inter Miami. And then it came down to, I thought we were headed for a 0-0, Mark, and deservedly so. I thought Miami had less of the ball in the first half and had created fewer opportunities but higher quality opportunities, and those were also chances on goal rather than Omer Fernandez or Georgi Mihailovic or Navajo just taking too many touches and then like dribbling in, taking a heavy touch and turning the ball over. But so in any case, 44 minutes in, Bassett plays through Cabral. Cabral doesn't give up on the opportunity. And Saylor, the center back, who I think was making his first start for Miami, who had a really good half to that point, takes out Cabral. It's a penalty. Navajo takes it after he and Georgi Mihailovic had a bit of a conversation. Not surprised at all who got the ball there, Mark. And Navajo does his stutter set run up. He went bottom left against Real Salt Lake, and he went bottom right on this one. Drake Callender, the goalkeeper, very good shot stopper, very good PK stopper for Inter Miami. Guess it's the right way, but there was just too much mustard on that, and Navajo scores, and the Rapids get out with a 1-0 lead. And then Mark the Cavalry comes in. Messi comes on at halftime. Jordi Alba and Sergio Busquets came in as well, and Messi completely changed the game because he's the GOAT, and that's what he does. 57 minutes in, excuse me, Messi scores on a great pass by, I don't have who got the assist on that one, but Messi finds space with Vines and Cole Bassett in the area. And then you had 3 minutes later, Messi sets up the transition sequence that then leads to Afonso scoring his first goal for the club with an absolute tap-in in transition. The Rapids were not set up well defensively for that second goal. They were set up better for the first one, but I'll talk about that later. Chances back and forth, Mark. I think Miami probably thought that they had the game under wraps and they were playing with their food a little bit. Messi hits the post on an outside chance. They take a couple of chances that I think are maybe not the highest quality opportunities. And at this point, it was going to come down to somebody was going to have one really big chance in the game. I thought that was going to be Miami to make it 3-1. It ended up being the Rapids, and it was Calvin Harris in transition, 2 minutes to go in regular time, squaring it to Cole Bassett, and Bassett just absolute conviction, bottom right corner, and the Rapids see out kind of a boring 6 minutes of stoppage time, Mark, to get the result 2-2, and they get out of there, and I think you ultimately deserved it in the end. Mark, I'll throw to you. Bueno things.
This is going to go down as both one of the most watched Rapids games in history, and I think that's some folks on Twitter thought the Pittsgiving was probably the most watched Rapids game. I think this some people erroneously thinking, not really knowing how much the league has grown, might even think it was their appearance in MLS Cup back in 2010. I think Messi gets eyeballs, and so this was. Probably to some degree, you could argue this was their best game of the year. They played really well. They scored 2 goals. If you look at the kind of like the kind of flow of the game, the beginning of the game, the Rapids really seemed to kind of control the ball for the first 20 minutes and were absolutely on top of it. The rest of the half was very close and back and forth. And then that goal right before going into the half was a fantastic opportunity for the Rapids to kind of jump ahead in beautiful form. The penalty by Navajo was just well taken. I would love to see him start scoring in the run of play, but that is a really minor thing. I think the highlights for me in general were just very basically like watching the Rapids individually playing against Lionel Messi, watching Ollie LeBraz kind of mark him in spots, watching Cole Bassett go one-on-one against him. I would say that I watched, I think there were a few kind of interceptions or tackles made by Sebastian Anderson, who had to fill in for the injured Keegan Rosenberry in this match, that were really, really great. I remember, really the last couple times Sebastian Anderson starting matches was either kind of like when the season was already over or when he was very young, when the Rapids kind of threw him in a couple years ago. And so I didn't really know what to expect, if he was going to rise to the challenge or whether this was kind of like, okay, dude, we don't have any other options. You're playing right back and you're facing possibly the best team in Major League Soccer. And he looked great, and he played really, really well. I thought Moise Bombito put in a good shift. He was standing in really well and did a fantastic job overall. The Messi goal was one of the prettiest goals you'll ever see. The way they moved it and redirected it across the field and then opened up space in the middle so that both the rest of the team and Messi could kind of challenge was just really fantastic. Really well done, and Franco Negri was the assist on that. Afonso's first goal ever as a Flamingo was a nice one, but I do think that considering the Rapids conceded a goal 2 minutes after the tying goal, they probably should have done better there. They were starting to get pulled apart. Miami looked tired at the 80th minute, and it started to kind of open up for the Rapids. I thought at that point, youth was going to start to make its stamp on the game. And the Cole Bassett goal was one of the prettiest goals the Rapids have scored in years. I don't remember a goal last year that I was as impressed by. You know, it was a goal in transition and a goal from the run of play. Those are the kind of goals that I really prize more than anything, because it is that mentality of shifting, you know, turning over the ball at midfield and then shifting, everyone shifting immediately into offense mode and being both creative, forward looking. It is to use a meme or an idea that we talk about a lot, but usually facetiously and sarcastically. It was kind of what they had hoped the Rapids way would be when they wrote about the Rapids way like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, which is high intelligence, high IQ, attacking football. You know, they made the turnover at the midfield and then they kind of like took it to the house. It was a lot of short touches, quick movement, really well done. So I don't think it really gets any better than that. Calvin Harris, his pass across and into goal for Cole Bassett, who finished clinically and beautifully, was fantastic. And Cole took the exact right number of touches. His first touch did not let him down. It was a fantastic first touch, set the whole thing up. I will say one thing, which is the man marking Cole Bassett at the post, who didn't get to him, was Sergio Busquets. And I think, to be very blunt and a little bit harsh, I think most players, most defensive midfielders in Major League Soccer, get their foot in there. I think Busquets kind of lets them down. But that's what you get with Busquets. I mean, it would be the same if we were talking 5 years ago about NYCFC and they were playing Andrea Pirlo, because that's what you get with the Regista. You get a guy who can add offense, but is not really kind of there defensively anymore. So those are my kind of takes. We also saw the debut of Lamine Diack. He had a tackle, which turned out to be a foul. That was pretty much all we saw of Diack, but you know, it was a good debut. Other than that, a lot of young guys who got to run out on the field against Lionel Messi, which is pretty amazing. I can't wait to ask some of the players about that somewhere down the line. You know, I think it's going to take a few weeks for them to come down and admit out loud, like, yeah, I dreamt about that moment my whole life. You don't ask them that in the moment, because they have to wear their game face and they have to take it seriously. So, but it was a fantastic performance by the Rapids. I was really, really happy for them. I think one of the other things that happens with Inter Miami and with a lot of really good teams, is you rise to the challenge. You get amped up for the opportunity, and they very much did.
Agree with you there, Mark. You started with highlighting some individuals, so I'll do that as well. Cole Bassett, for me, Mark, I think had one of his better games at this, you know, new position that he's now been in, the double pivot with Ollie LaRoz. And the complaint or the concern that we've had about him moving further back is that while he helps better in the build-up in terms of making it easier for the Rapids to go from their defensive third to the attacking third, is that ultimately he's further away from goal. And I still think he's the best chance creator in terms of, can I create a shot for me? Can I get open to have someone create a shot for someone else, or create a shot for me? We saw that on both goals that he scored from the run of play. And I think now he's doing a better job of understanding when and where to go forward. That late run, the reason why it makes sense to move him further back compared to any of the other guys who would play in the three behind Navajo, is that he's the guy who makes that Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard late run into the middle. And he's done that twice now and scored his two goals on the season for that. So I think he's getting a better sense of when he's supposed to do that under the new system, where previously he was brought in to the first team with Anthony Hudson, who had a very specific idea for him and in ways built the team around him in that role. And then obviously Robin Fraser, who he had almost 4 years of working with in order to fully understand the system and what he wanted and what that was supposed to do, like, regardless of the midfielders that were playing around him. So Cole Bassett finally looks, I think, settled and looks comfortable in what he's doing in all three phases of play. And that's been enabled by the absolutely fantastic play of Ollie LaRoz, who I thought had another just really solid game, preventing fires rather than needing to put them out and just being a metronome in possession. And so I thought he was really good. Mark, can we agree that Moise Bombito is probably the best defender on the Colorado Rapids at this point? We've seen him do very good in set piece defending, We've seen him do a very good job in terms of their stance defense against someone else in possession. He had two really great defensive runs off of rapid set piece opportunities that turned into transition moments for Miami, where he just makes a 30, 40 yard run to clean up a play. I don't know that Andreas Maksu makes that. I don't know that a 30-year-old Keegan Rosenberry makes that kind of play.
He was not only the best defender for the Rapids last night, he was the best defender on the field last night. I bet there were moments where Tata Martino and Lionel Messi and Sergei Busquets said, we should get that guy. You know, like that. That's how good he was last night or Saturday night.
10 million and a 50% sell on clause, and he can't play against the Rapids ever again. And I'll take it right now. I think we'll get to this with my bad thing, but if nothing else, I think the Rapids, both when they're playing out of the back, like they did more the first half, and in transition, like they did more the second half, they do a good job of getting into good areas. And the biggest net positive for me there is they're turning those good situations into set piece opportunities. They are forcing the opponent to make a defensive play that then concedes a corner, concedes a long throw in. Granted, they didn't have Rosenberry on the field to in the game to take those long throw-ins, and then ultimately foul them and win set pieces. Kevin Cabral, Mark, I thought had another very good game. I think he's raising what his floor is. He works really hard defensively. His mobility and his simple two-touch passing is very good. Just like Omir Fernandez and still like Georgi Mihailovic, he goes many minutes in a row being invisible in the attack, and still his go-to move in the attack is get a little bit of space, dribble forward, and then instead of doing something with the ball, he dribbles, takes too many touches, or takes a heavy touch, and then immediately gets intercepted by an opposing defender. And he does that, and Navajo does that, and Omir Fernandez does that. And I don't know if that's tactical, Mark. I don't know if that's part of the system of what they're being encouraged to do by the attacking coaches or whatever. It continues to not be effective. It continues to be a concern I have about what this team is trying to do, given the setup that they have, both in possession and in transition. But if nothing else, they're creating set pieces, and they're looking dangerous on set pieces. Miami was fantastically prepared. Drake Callender, Saylor, the center back, Busquets, once he was in the game as well, in terms of defending those set pieces. Mark, I think there's a scenario where the Rapids actually win this game 3-2 because of a set piece goal. To your point, Rabbi, Lamine Diak finally makes his appearance and finally makes his Rapids debut. And I thought he did a really good job defensively from a work rate standpoint, catching up to the game with the intensity and the atmosphere that was going on. And he made two or three really good defensive plays that, I was just really impressed with. And if that's something that he can bring, then I think that is a differential compared to Ollie LaRoz and Cole Bassett that situationally will make him useful in that role. And I think similar to Connor Ronan, he provides a defensive steadiness that then would allow a Cole Bassett to go forward more often than, say, an Ollie LaRoz does. Whether or not this leads to Diak getting a start next week against San Jose, I'm not going to predict that right now. Whether or not he's done enough to then start more regularly to where he's worth whatever the transfer fee is on that, we'll see. I would not be shocked, Mark, if I had to guess right now what I think the most likely thing is. I think he gradually works his way into the lineup, not enough for the Rapids to actually pull the trigger on the purchase option, and then they extend the loan through the end of the year, and then that purchase option gets bumped to December. If I had to put money on it right now, I think that's what happens. Who knows? We've got like 12 games, however many games before that becomes a thing. And then Mark, while Navajo again didn't do a whole lot on goal from the run of play, another really solid penalty. And for me, I don't think there's any question who the PK taker should be for the Rapids when he is on the field. It should not be Georgi Mihailovic. And while I've seen good stuff from Cole Bassett over the years and better stuff from him for over the years in terms of him working on PKs and wanting to take PKs, Navajo has a plan. And it's worked on too, and he does it, is cool, calm, and collected. If nothing else, he is goal dangerous with that. Let Navajo take it, not Georgie. Mark, bad things.
I'm not sure that there's really that much bad in this game. I mean, Mihailovic was a little absent in terms of invisibility, but I think what I know as a guy who's watched a lot of soccer and a lot of Colorado Rapids soccer in specific is, and based on what I wrote last week in Holding the Highline Substack, looking at some of the tendencies, both statistically and tactically, of the Colorado Rapids, Colorado wants to kind of go down the wings, and that means that Mihailovic isn't going to get as many touches. It puts him in a role that's very similar to Cole Bassett, of being kind of a late arrival in the box, or kind of like a point guard at the top of the key kind of situation. So, but he was a little uninvolved. I don't think that's bad, but it's somewhat concerning. There were a couple moments. Sam Vines had a really great chance in like the 81st minute, and he didn't quite take it very well. And Vines had a few defensive kind of moments that were a little bit of a little miscue-y, but you know, like overall he was fine. But I've really been looking for the Sam Vines who defined the Colorado Rapids a few years ago and was the kind of driving engine, the straw that stirs the drink, and he hasn't been that yet, and I'm not really sure what's up with that. And then Rafael Navajo and Darren Yappe, you know, not scoring goals from the run of play yet again. Navajo had a goal, but Yappe didn't. And yeah, I mean, like, he came on late, so I understand that. One other good thing that I didn't really get to mention. We do this sometimes. We're a little overly focused. I think you know what I'm going to say. We get overly focused on outfield players, and we just kind of forget that there's a guy between the sticks. But Zach Steffen had a save on a Leo Messi shot in like the 78th or something like that, 77th minute, where Messi took that. Maurice Adu, I think, was on the call. And he said something really brilliant, which was like, Messi does more with that 1 yard step that you give him than almost any other player in the game. And Messi had one touch kind of away and across the 18 yard box, and then put the ball on, and he put it basically as hard as you can, with as much direction as you possibly could. And Zach Steffen made an outstretched two-handed stop to make it. And it was an above average stop by a goalkeeper, and one that not everybody's going to make. It was a good reaction. It was good positioning. It was a good athletic play. I gave Steffen some stick last week for not being, for being basically at the bottom statistically of where goalkeepers are. It's still very early. Sample size is very small for goalkeepers, especially. So I'm reserving judgment. So he had a good match too. But a couple invisible players, and then there was that, you know, kind of conceding the second goal 2 minutes after the first goal. There was some brain fartery going on there. So what about you, Matt?
Not a bad thing in that this was something the Rapids could have done anything about, Mark, but for all that we've talked about how Scabby got things wrong from the run of play and required VAR to get something right, I still just, I can't see where in that penalty shout in the eighth minute with Georgi Mihailovic and David Ruiz, Mark, who, you know, was, you know, we're talking, he is, you know, two half steps away from, I think, getting a red card and then another red card as well. If we're talking about would have been a yellow against Georgie, maybe, for the stomp. And then it would have been, I think it would have been a dog. So if he actually did foul Kevin Cabral a minute later. So, you know, peak Ted Uncle, maybe 9.5 out of 10 on that scale. And the fact that Scabby's involved in both, this Bazakos was on the VAR, Mark, and didn't even have Ted go to the monitor. We said that we wanted Scabby gone, Mark, and we wanted the refs back, and we wanted the ability to boo Ted Uncle as the soccer gods intended it, and the Rapids got that 2 weeks later. To your point, Mark, I can't fault the first goal that much, because if you look at it, it's Miami building out of the back kind of slowly, and every single pass along the way, the Rapids defender who's marking the individual Miami player on the ball is doing about what I wanted them to do, really, until you get to the actual pass to Messi, and then Messi shooting first time, in which Vines was kind of in the shooting angle and Cole was kind of in the passing angle. But for either of them to move out of their position, that changes the shape, which then creates more space elsewhere for maybe a better pass and a higher quality opportunity, rather than Messi picking out a corner and having to put it in off the post. And so, but this mark was really the first goal that I think we've seen where the opponent has built out of possession with the Rapids in their defensive stance and the Rapids doing everything that they were supposed to do. But nobody makes a big play when a big play is required, given the quality that Miami had on the ball. And look, sometimes that's just going to happen, Mark. You know, there are very good defensive managers who go to the Emirates, the Etihad, well, maybe not Old Trafford anymore, but go to Anfield and have a very good defensive setup, whether it's, you know, it can be Brighton, it can be West Ham at times. Fulham has done this as well and are perfectly set up to deal with an individual play. And you just see five spectacular plays by five spectacular world-class players who all cost $100 million. And there's nothing that you can do in that situation. And there was nothing Pablo Mastroeni could have coached that situation. Mark Gary Smith could have coached that situation in. And there was nothing that you could have done with just the precision of the quality that they've had. And so to be clear, this isn't a criticism of the Rapids. This is to say that this is the first goal in which I think their set defense was picked apart in ways that it has not been previously. And that is a reflection on what Chris Armas has done, because one of the big things that he harped on in the interview process and so far in his time at the club has been that they do not beat themselves. They do not make mistakes that then lead to goals. And so, Mark, that is just a huge step up from last year, where we'll see a passing sequence. The Rapids are set up. They know what's coming. And one guy makes a small mistake. And then the next guy makes a small mistake. And then the next guy makes a reasonable, but on its own, in a vacuum, not a terrible mistake. And then that leads to a big opportunity. And somebody has to make a great defensive play, hospital ball, put out a fire because the fire is spreading, and then they don't, and it leads to a goal. And so this is the first time where I can look at that and say that happened with the opponent in possession. Now, where I do have a criticism is they got absolutely pulled apart on the goal in transition. Midfield wasn't back in position to kind of help out. All of the Ross and Cole Bassett caught out, and then that goal mark is on Zach Steffen's right side of the goal, and Sebastian Anderson is the most upfield of the back four as well. And so I'm not sure what they saw from that, but the management overall was okay. Hopefully it was a good learning experience in terms of how do we go about being aggressive against an opponent who's so good on the ball, but can also do good stuff in transition, not because they're fast, but because they make smart runs, don't waste energy, and they have a world-class player who threads the ball perfectly. And as you said, does more with one foot of space than anybody else in the world, with the exception of maybe Kylian Mbappe. I wouldn't put Neymar in that. Cristiano Ronaldo, Erling Haaland, those types of players. So there's that. And then to that point, Mark, I still think the underlying concerns that we have about what this team's default setup is in terms of how much they press, the way in which they press, what their press is trying to do, and what they're trying to do in possession that ultimately leads to an attacker getting the ball with a little bit of space, dribbling into a defender and turning it over rather than getting a shot on goal, is the switch that we saw from Chris Armas bringing on Calvin Harris and Darren Yapi, where Armas was asked about this post-game, Mark, and he actually said it kind of turned into a 4-2-2-2. It was a diamond at times. His words, Mark, not mine. So this is the first time we've seen a reference to the Red Bulls formation of the 4-2-2-2. And the fact that he did that out of desperation to try and get into the game with the personnel that he had off the bench, and it also worked, then suggests to me, like, again, the question I have, Mark, is how much is this team trying to be versus how much is this team trying to be Red Bulls Colorado? How much is Chris Armas choosing to not do that is a reflection of his own ideas about the game, trying to differentiate himself from the Red Bull stick and the negativity around that, or him trying to fit a square peg of a system into a round hole of the players that he's been given, and how much of this is just working out the kinks as well. That was an okay excuse against Portland, where they had some injuries and nobody was fit, and it was the first game of the season, and they got punched in the half in the mouth in the first half. That will not be an acceptable excuse in 2 months' time. And increasingly, Mark, I am not having that excuse in terms of it leading to incremental progress. I don't know that from the base system yet, we've seen incremental progress in the last two games. We've seen heroic individual moments in those games that have led to getting results, not the system of its own accord standing on its own in terms of putting the Rapids in position to get results. And that's still the canary in the coal mine, the this is fine meme, the Rapids are a house of cards and they're going to miss the playoffs concern that I have. I'll just go to big thing now, Mark, because it's the last thing I have to say about this game. It cannot be understated how much the Rapids went into this game and got punched in the mouth, you know, 15 minutes into the second half and were not starstruck, did not shrink in the moment, given the significance of the game, given the game state, and then given the opposition that they were going against. They had the presence of mind to respect the quality of the opponent for what they are, not what they were in the past, not get starstruck or fanboy, and ultimately see out the game and get a result. And that is most exemplified for me, Mark, in Bassett, as you said, cooking Busquets to get the game winner and then asking for Busquets shirts post game because he sees so much in what Busquets was that he wants to be as a midfielder, but also understanding that he could have beaten him in that moment and to go forward with bravery and conviction and to go about doing that. And that shows for me, Mark, a change in the culture and in the character around this team that was not there last year. And so if nothing else, like, this is a building block for the team as they work through some of their issues, or as Chris Armas goes about iterating on his system and trying to have the team be in a better position to get a result from the start of games rather than what happens in the second half. Rabbi, any big things or shall we move on?
I mean, the big thing is the Colorado Rapids played a game against the greatest player in possibly all of soccer history. And so it kind of transcends the actual game. And they got a draw, which is really an amazing result. The other big thing, of course, that I've already been writing and talking about for a couple weeks is this team is overachieving what we thought they would do in seven games. We've reached the end of the seven-game rough stretch. The next couple games are a bit of a trap because we actually kind of expect them to win at this point. They've overachieved in their first seven games, so now we need to just simply achieve at the level that we think they can, which means turn in, you know, get 6 points in their next three matches or get, you know, 4 points in the next three matches and just keep along at that like 1.5 points per game kind of pace through the first 20 games of the season. So that's where we're at right now. You know, I think actually big thing here, interestingly enough, is I wonder what the MLS pundits are really going to talk about with Miami. There is some fixture congestion coming on with them. They did play Lionel Messi only for a half. He does have to face Monterrey next week at Monterrey. I have in all three of the MLS versus Liga MX team games, I have all three MLS teams taking the L. New England is definitely going to lose. I think Philadelphia is the other match. They're not looking very good in that one.
It's Columbus, Mark.
Columbus. That's right. Yes. But they got a 1-1 draw in their first match at home. And that was now they're going away to Tigres.
They got that red card, though, Mark. And Cucho Hernandez does not look things.
Something's
are not
wrong.
Bueno.
Yeah. Something's wrong with Cucho. And, you know, he's been excluded for violating team policies. And, you know, I know we're kind of mixing things up by adding some CCC coverage in the middle of our wrap up of Miami. But for Miami, the next thing they have is CCC. You know, this is a team that I think at the beginning of the season, people were thinking can do the double, you know, and their double was expected to be CONCACAF and MLS, or maybe they take Leagues Cup and MLS Cup. Right now, they're going to need to conserve their energy to win any trophies. And so that's a change in narrative. And I think that it's a big deal.
Yeah. Mark, if you had told me before the start of the season, the Rapids could get 9 points from these first seven games, I would have taken it. I would have taken 7 points, to be honest with you. That being said, like, we still have to account for, you know, there was the red card against Seattle. They probably should have won that game. The red card against LAFC certainly helped them a little bit. Nashville had some injuries. Miami had some injuries. I can't remember who else. Houston had some injuries, but they came out with a win, and that could have been 1 point as well. So it's a mixed bag, but points on the board or points on the board. And if this is the worst that the Rapids are going to be because it's the start of the season, and if it's the worst that it's going to be from a scheduling standpoint as well, you know, looking up, as you mentioned, there's a few potential bananas. Skins, but if that means it's an easier opponent, Mark, then the Rapids can get some results, get some confidence, and build on this a little bit more, then I think they're in a position to, you know, get better by the time we get to the dog days of the summer, certainly. Mark, we are going to check in with Rapidos, but first tell our listeners how they can support Holding the High Line, and what is the merch update from the merch lair?
Matt leaves all merchandise decisions to me, like it's like I'm the CFO and I've made a detailed business plan and I have incredibly advanced financials here. The plan is this. I was thinking about this for the last couple of weeks. I think we'll spring it on our listeners now. Folks, if you are subscriber Highliner, you will get a shirt in the mail from us. Just subscribe and shoot us an email to let us know that you've recently subscribed, and we will drop you a little bit of merch in the mail. If you are a paid Highliner and you're a subscriber and you have not received a t-shirt yet, you have to fill out a little form online. You can find it on the Substack. Once you're a subscriber, you have access to that. You just fill out the form and we'll mail you a shirt. The mailroom is closed for the next week because I am on vacation in sunny California with my wife and family. Mostly, we are just going to eat at every taqueria in the San Francisco area. That's basically the plan. And visit old friends. But the plan is this. Going forward, for the bargain price of $22 plus $6 shipping and handling, you can, I think it's $7 actually, $7 shipping and handling. That'll be in the material. Our non-subscribers can get a Holding the Highline t-shirt in performance black or camo gray. That can go to all of you, whether you are a subscriber or not. If you're interested, there will be a form on the Substack, and then we'll link it on the Facebook and also over on the Twitter machine, aka X. That deal will go out, and in addition to that, we will be contributing as a podcast $3 from every shirt to the Azira Michael Foundation. The Azira Michael Foundation, a foundation started by the patron saint, Michael Azira, the greatest defensive midfielder on God's green earth, and one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Michael's foundation provides for a school, a soccer team, school supplies, and family support for back home in his hometown in Uganda. So it's a great offer. You know, basically, we're effectively selling these shirts roughly at cost so that we can make a donation in their honor to the Azira Michael Foundation. So get on that. We'll make some donations, and I'll probably wind up matching the $3 donations for everybody. So if we sell 10 shirts, you know, or 20 shirts, then I'll probably donate another 30 or 50 bucks out of my own pocket just to cover it and make Mike feel good. So so all of you non-Highliners, we'd love for you to buy a shirt. We'll let you know the sizes that are available. We're real long on larges, and the camo gray is available in lots of sizes. If you are specific special sizes, there is limited availability. Back to you, Matt.
I'll say right now, Mark, I'll match that with you as well. So the sooner you buy a cert, you're contributing $3 towards that, and then HDHL combined are putting $9 towards the Azira Michael Foundation. Other note that I have, Mark, the friends that I stayed with before Inter Miami was a thing after the Miami Fusion just had like a bunch of random MLS merch, and the dad of my godson, Nicholas, has a large Rapids training top, long sleeve, 2010-ish era. That he, you know, he said like, "Hey Matt, like I know this is a large and you wear a small, you probably don't want it, but like, could you find somebody who wants a home for that?" So that is, I don't want to post this on Twitter and then have some random person on social media find this. I want this to specifically go to someone who listens to the podcast. So reach out, DMs are open, rapid96podcast@gmail.com. I would be happy to share photos. I would be happy to bring it to the tailgate and have you see it in person and try it on and everything. There is a large Rapids training top, burgundy with the gray sleeves and everything, and the gray armpit area, long sleeves, that needs a home, and I would be happy to help you find a home full free. Mark, let's talk about Colorado Rapids 2. They played in the South Platte River Derby this past Wednesday against Noco Hailstorm, and David Garcia scored in the 120-minute absolute slugfest, Mark, going back and forth. There were multiple times that I thought it was over, and fundamentally, I think Hailstorm's experience and veteran nous in the moment, particularly with the players that they had on their bench, ultimately saw out, I think, the better talent of Rapids 2, but then also the Maybe the fitness was a little bit of an issue as Hailstorm had the weekend off and LAFC 2 and Colorado Rapids 2 played on the Sunday prior. And they had an absolute crazy game, Mark, which I am looking up now. I saw that there were a bunch of goals, but I can't remember what the final score was. This was in their first game at DU, actually, Mark. And that would have been a 5-3 loss to Sporting Kansas City 2, in which at one point they were up 3-1. So SKC 2 scored the first goal, and then Rapids 2 scored 3 unanswered, and then there were 4 unanswered, all in the second half from SKT 2. And so if I look now, Mark, at the table for Rapids 2, they're sitting on how many points? They're sitting on 4 points from 4 games played and are 10th out of 14. It is still early and kind of an uneven schedule. Mark, Rapids 2 are very, very young. They had a lot of turnover last year. Arguably, they lost their top 3, top 4 best players. Remy Cabral signing a first-team deal. Yosuke Hanya going to switchbacks on loan. And then Ollie LaRoz being with the first team. And Sebastian Anderson now mostly being with the first team. And I don't know if you paid attention to this, listeners, but the way that the schedule works, the second teams are not necessarily mirroring the schedule of the first teams in every single game. So where it was very easy, you know, let's say Rapids 2 are Colorado Rapids are hosting Vancouver Whitecaps, and then Whitecaps 2 is coming to play Rapids 2. So then you could have first team players be on the bench, be available for selection, and then if they're not used or they have minutes in their legs, they can then just stay in the same place, stay on the Sunday. If it's an away game, they can travel with the first team on the charter, and then if they end up, they can make a post-game decision for them to stay, go to the hotel with the second team, and then play with the second team, and then fly back with the second team. That was not the case this past weekend, and so Mark, Rapids 2 have a relatively short leash in terms of the actual like signed professional contracts from players that are not with the Rapids Academy or are not homegrowns with the first team that then get loaned down. So young team, bit of turnover, there's some transition. I still think Eric Boucher is a really good coach, and they still have some principles of play and some values and some culture that is going to carry over and help them get results, but it's a little bit of a rough start. Mark, are you paying attention to this? Do you care about this at all? Or fundamentally, if Rapids 2 just exists so that Nate Jones and Wayne Frederick and Kamani Stewart-Baines can get minutes and make progress towards being with the first team, is that job done? As disappointing as it was to see R2 not win a trophy last year and then see the results of their success lead to so much turnover.
The not winning a trophy last year did not bother me. I think the game yesterday where they got absolutely shellacked and they did it in just 19 minutes, they conceded 4 goals. It was between the 68th and the 80 whatever 19 minutes is after 68. 87th minute is really a learning experience, shall we say. And I think that's the most important and valuable thing for R2. I think the other thing to remember about R2 is that they were a little light in terms of their depth. Normally when the Rapids, especially when they're both at home, they have all of the reserve players who maybe were in the 18 for the Rapids, but didn't figure and didn't play too many minutes. In this game, they had a pretty short lineup. They didn't have a lot of the players that they normally do. They had Marlon Vargas, who is kind of their main man in the middle. They had Alec Diaz up top, but and then they didn't start a number of the guys that you mentioned. In fact, Nate Jones stayed on the bench and didn't get any run. And then, of course, a bunch of their other players who are, you know, often possibly going to get some chances there, like Darren Yappe, if he doesn't get into a Rapids game or if he doesn't play many minutes, like Sebastian Anderson, who can play at right back for them. And most importantly, probably Kamani Stewart-Baines. Wayne Frederick wasn't in this lineup. You know, Nate Jones, like I said, didn't play. So that's a big deal. They were probably playing their more youthful, less experienced roster. In addition, GA Cup was going at the same time. So maybe some of their younger players were sent down to GA Cup. I actually haven't tracked that, so don't quote me on that one. So this might have been more of an anomaly than anything, but it is a learning experience. It is an opportunity for these young guys to kind of grow and understand how to kind of close out a game. They say, you know, 2-0 is the most dangerous league. Well, apparently 3-1 is more dangerous than 2-0. And this team is learning that. I want to see growth. I want to see opportunity. I think the thing that we are learning this year is that a lot of our best Rapids players this year who were with R2 probably shouldn't have been with R2 last year. You know, Ali Laraz wasn't given chances, and now he's looking good with the senior team. Moise Bombito did spend most of his time with the senior team, but didn't get enough opportunities perhaps early. Calvin Harris probably, he seems to be kind of like in pen on the team sheet for Chris Armas, and he wasn't last year. So these are some things that we're kind of learning. Sebastian Anderson, another one of those names where, like, maybe, you know, I think the indication of a very strong R2 team basically means these are guys who probably should be getting opportunities with the senior team. That's possible. It could just be Chris Armas has put together a really good team and the other guys are kind of putting it together. So I'm excited for R2 to continue developing. I hope I get to watch more of these matches.
The one player exclusively with Rapids 2 I've been really impressed with has been the forward Alec Diaz. He's played a little bit on the wing and a little bit up top. He scored a great goal, the third goal that probably should have been ultimately the game winner on Sunday. He was a product of the Seattle Sounders Academy, and then he spent some time with Tacoma Defiance, and I think he was with Toronto FC 2 last year, and so I think he's been really decent so far for Rapids 2. I've been impressed with him with every single game that he's played, but to your point, Mark, it might be it's going to be a turnover. R2 are going to take some lumps this year. There's some younger players who are probably going to have some sporadic results. Some of those are going to be good. More of those are probably going to be bad, but you know, excited to see if nothing else, that team will exist for the first team players who are needing minutes. And Mike Edwards has taken a leadership role with that team, certainly at the back defensively. And if nothing else, like, we know Nate Jones, Mark, is probably going to get a lot of minutes with Rapids too. And so if that means that he's playing on a team that is struggling defensively, but then that leads to him being better defensively, you know, I think that helped a number of the academy guys who've now broken in with the first team. I look at, you know, Ollie Laraz, who is with R2 in their first year, you know, who just being on a team that is struggling where they can help lift that team up then puts you in a better position to then elevate your game when it comes to the first team. And so I could say that about Sebastian Anderson. I could say that about Ali Laraz. Hopefully, Mark, in a year or two, we'll be saying that about Adam Beaudry. Adam Beaudry, Mark, that reminds me, had, I thought, a really poor game against Hailstorm. He was caught out on a play that led to a goal. He had two shots from distance that came from 30 yards out that were near the post that he did not look comfortable on. So I think for the fans who are clamoring for Adam Beaudry to maybe at some point get an opportunity for the first team, if Zach Steffen has a slight niggle or gets yellow card accumulation, I think that's be fine. That should be fine. But Zach Steffen, if he's healthy, should be starting. And Adam Beaudry probably needs another year in R2. I still see a lot of potential. I still see so many metrics and measurables about him that have his potential way higher than what A-Broad was, even when A-Broad was captaining and starting over him for Rapids 2. Mark, let's move on. This coming Saturday, the Colorado Rapids will be playing at PayPal Park. I can't keep track of what San Jose Stadium is. In any case, they're playing at San Jose Earthquakes. Mark, the San Jose Earthquakes are bad this year. So we are, what, 7 games into the 2024 MLS regular season. Colorado Rapids sitting in 9th place, the last playoff spot, on 9 points from 7 games played, a record of 2-2-3. They have a goal difference of -2, and on the road this season, they are 1-1-2. San Jose, bottom of the pile. They are 14th out of 14. They have just 3 points off of 7 games played. They are 1-6-0. They have 1 win and 6 losses, folks, and the hallmark of this team last year was what they looked like organization-wise defensively. They brought in Wilson, their center back, was one of their big acquisitions, the Portuguese center back, and they've conceded 17 goals in 7 games played. Mark, they have conceded 2 or more goals in every one of the 7 games that they have played, and they've conceded 3 or more goals in 3 of those games. This is not a good team defensively. Mark, we remember thinking that Austin was going to be crap this year, right?
We did think Austin was going to be bad. Dead last.
Mark, when Austin played San Jose Earthquakes on the weekend, what do you think happened?
Oh, it was 7 goal fest. It was a total train wreck. It was it's worth watching the replay of it. It's really a kind of a wild and crazy time. So
Yes, and that wild and crazy time, Mark, happened in which San Jose was up 2-0, 20-minute with 30 minutes to go, and then Austin scored to then make it 2-2, and then San Jose scored to make it 3-2, and Driussi, oh, excuse me, it was 3-2 Austin at one point, and then San Jose tied it, and then in the 11th minute of stoppage time, Sebastian Driussi basically Chelsea'd Manchester United, only Manchester United in this case is San Jose Earthquake. So, Mark, they're not a good team. Their one win came against who? Their one win came in a 3-2 win over Seattle Sounders. We know that Seattle Sounders has not been good, Mark, and that was also around the time that the Rapids played them, and they also had a bunch of injuries. So make of that result what you will. Let's go to the actual personnel, Mark. There's been some injuries for San Jose Earthquake. So Daniel has normally been their goalkeeper. William Yarbrough, Mark, actually started in that 4-3 goal fest that saw San Jose lose. I have the San Jose Earthquakes availability report from last week. So David, one of their goalkeepers, was out with a lower body injury. I believe JT Markinkowski is also a goalkeeper, and he was out with a knee injury. Baldessimo is a player who I've really liked for them at times. He was questionable with a lower body injury. I should point out, Mark, it looks like San Jose is potentially going 2023 Rapids with some of these injury availability. And then one of their key attacking players who they brought in this offseason, Mark, Amil Pellegrino, was questionable with a lower body injury. So we'll see if any of those guys are back, Mark, but without. And then I don't see Wilson listed on the injury list here, and he was not in the team squad, so I wasn't sure what was going on there, Mark. But in any case, so this team was very good last year defensively. They were expected to be good this year defensively. They have not been. Injuries are a part of that. Beeson's in goal, or Beeson is at center back. Rodriguez is also at center back. I don't recognize any of their midfielders. They've had some turnover there. And maybe the two attacking players worth pointing out, Mark, are Jeremy Obobese, who I would say is, you know, an average MLS domestic player. You know, would I expect him to get 10 goals this year? Yes, Mark. And then Christian Espinoza, who this time last year, Rabbi, was absolutely lighting it up for the Goonies and even was a dark horse for MLS MVP, and he ultimately ended up making the All-Star game, but he's kind of cooled off and been a little bit inconsistent. So Mark, for me, I think if you stop Espinoza on the ball and you don't give up opportunities on set pieces when Espinoza is taking those set pieces, and you have Andreas Maxu and Moise Bombito do a good job of double teaming Jeremy Obobese, I would not be concerned about what San Jose is bringing offensively. Mark, this is a bad team who is down bad, who is injured, and unless their injury report changes significantly from this week to last week, this needs to be a win, and this needs to be a breakout game for the Rapids attack in ways that the last two games from the run of play have not been.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. I think you've made some really good points about their defensive woes. They had really kind of hoped that Espinoza and Ewell and Jeremy Obobese together would continue to grow over the last couple years that they've built, but that the defense would kind of hold them up. Last year, they were a little bit better. They finished ninth because they were able to defend a little with those three players kind of forming the backbone of a 4-3-3 attack. This year, they've added two young players to that mix, Kikanovic and Sakiris. A lot of letters in both of those names, both American players. Kikanovic is 24. Sakiris is 18. So there's a lot of excitement there in theory about the growth of those two players, but it hasn't been realized yet. I think the bigger thing to think about with San Jose is their lack of development over the many years. They have a new stadium, but it's very disappointing for a lot of the local fans. It's kind of underwhelming, and it's already starting to feel like it was a little bit cheap compared to some of the other stadiums that have been brought in recently. What I wrote in my season preview in January, I really liked this, so I wanted to go back to it. With the possible exception of New York Red Bulls, San Jose are probably the MLS originals in the worst shape of late. They haven't finished top of the conference or with a trophy since 2012. They did inaugurate a cool new stadium in 2015, but in just the past few years since, the $100 million PayPal Park has quickly been surpassed by larger and more impressive MLS fields like LAFC's $350 million BMO Stadium and Columbus Crew's $314 million lower.com field. By all this, I mean San Jose don't seem particularly ambitious. They're an MLS original with a ho-hum stadium and no clear aspirations for trophies. No wonder I always like San Jose. They're basically the Colorado Rapids, but for tech bros. One last note on this. I will be in the Bay Area for this game. I don't think I'll be going in person, but if I wanted to slink down to a local, because the distance from San Francisco to San Jose is an hour each way. So it's almost easier for me to, it probably is easier for me to drive to Columbus for a game than it is to get from San Francisco to San Jose. By the way, that has always been to me a major problem with San Jose, which is that the Bay Area deserves two soccer teams at the highest level, and they don't have one. I would probably more likely go to an Oakland Roots game or an El Farolito match than I would go to a San Jose game. And that's like a broader kind of problem about this. By the way, also, NWSL have added a team too called Bay FC. I don't remember. I think they also play at PayPal, but they're really doing well. They sold out their first game. Lines were around the block. So that is both a sign of how exciting soccer is in the Bay Area and how disappointing San Jose is, that like there's not a lot of excitement and energy behind this team. And I think, by the way, Matt, one of the things that we sometimes do is we talk about the match because we get, you know, into the specifics, but it's important to remember, or I enjoy talking about kind of the broader brush strokes of Major League Soccer, of like where the league is going and where the teams are going. And so that's a really notable thing.
To your point, Mark, about the Bay Area being big enough for two teams, and as we've seen now that, you know, MLS put a team in New York proper, and I think that elevated and pushed the ambition of New York Red Bulls. And I think we can agree that now, you know, LA Galaxy have now had to push more since LAFC's come into existence. Rabbi, if only there was a huge plot of land that was used for a municipal stadium that is going to be vacated in the next year to then be the perfect spot for some redevelopment, a stadium district, and a soccer stadium. And if only that area also already had a pretty successful, well-supported USL championship team. If only something like that existed. And if only this market, Mark, also had a bunch of tech bros with a bunch of money who then wanted to drop billions of dollars on a fun thing in that area to then increase the revenue. Or I don't know. Like Mark Zuckerberg,
Larry Ellison, Mark Zuckerberg, call me. I'm available to be your general manager.
Yes, absolutely. Like Zuckerberg, would you not want to have, like, you could literally call it like Metaverse Stadium, and then you could have that, and it could be in Oakland, and you could have Oakland Roots or whatever iteration takes over and everything. And if that, Mark, I can't think of a better thing to wake up the existing San Jose Earthquakes or force the, is it the same owner as Austin? Or as the Oakland A's, Mark. Like, I can't think of a better way of waking that team up than to do that. Like, if Colorado Springs was a bigger market that actually warranted an MLS team, Mark, and that team came in with, you know, Austin, St. Louis, Atlanta Energy as an expansion team, that would wake the Rapids and KSC up, or that would force KSC to actually sell. Mark, I think I just talked myself into arguing that Switchback should push for MLS expansion as a way to get the Rapids to change ownership and have somebody who cares and replace the scoreboard.
Yeah, you've actually put your finger on one thing that we could talk about all the problems with San Jose for a long podcast if we want, but we got to get out of here. I got to get on a plane I got to get on a plane in like 5 hours.
Okay, so Mark,
No, it's okay, but I just wanted to say real quick, the owner of the San Jose Earthquakes is John Fisher. He also owns the Oakland A's and is moving them to Las Vegas. And so I don't think there's that much open animosity and bad blood in the same vein as, like, you know, the Cronkies are not deeply beloved by Colorado Rapids fans, but we're not going to turn our backs on them and walk away because of things they've done with other teams in their ownership stable. So. But it's a relatable point. I just wanted to add, you know, at the end of the podcast, Matt, that you had a really kind of wild experience at the, you know, at the end of your Miami experience of kind of like trying to get interviews and get out of there. If you want to share a little bit about like trying to, you know, like being in a mix zone, you know, maybe in theory thinking like maybe there's a chance I get to interview Lionel Messi, and then like having your deep hopes dashed while security guards held you back with your microphone in hand while you threw questions. Preguntas, Señor Messi, ¿qué es el más mejor podcast en todo el mundo? You know, like what was that like for you?
I don't want to, I haven't had a chance to debrief Mark. Something may have happened from a communication standpoint. I think there's something to be said for a visiting club and a visiting member of the independent media, understanding the layout of a stadium, where stuff is supposed to be, and then also being prepared for that, talking about that beforehand. And that just didn't happen to happen. The fact that the place that I was supposed to meet in theory to get anybody post game for a one-on-one, and then also where the team was actually leaving, was also the exact spot where a bunch of security were clearing it out for Messi to seamlessly exit the stadium. It was probably, it was a perfect storm in terms of that kind of a situation. So I was not manhandled by any security guards or anything. I was not oppressed by a member of the Rapids or the Inter Miami comms team or whatever. Like, this was not my First Amendment rights as freedom of the press were not upended or anything in any of that way. It was just a logistical cluster, and that happens sometimes from a media standpoint. Cole Bassett said some nice quotes, and I got to use it post game, and I did get to interact with the players, albeit not in a formal interview standpoint, so it wasn't a on the record thing. I will say, Mark, Kevin Cabral, who now increasingly seems to like and respect me despite what I've said, maybe he doesn't understand English enough to know how we criticize him, but he came up of his own accord and shook my hand and everything, and I said, you know, good result, better performance, you know. He said, thank you. You know, I'm working really hard. I'm trying to get better on this, that, and the other thing. And then I asked him, this was before Rafael Navajo posted on his social media that he got Messi's shirt. But, you know, I asked him, like, who got Messi's shirt and how and everything. He's like, oh, Rafa, you know, walked up to Messi, you know, blah, 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 Brazil, blah, blah. I kind of know Neymar, give me your shirt kind of a thing. And then he was, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek annoyed about it. And I'm sure there were everybody was mad that Rafael, that Navajo ended up getting it, Mark. And the fact that he used the fact that he was Brazilian, you know, I think if you had asked every single player before the game, regardless of the result, do you want a selfie with Messi? Do you want to shake his hand? Do you want a shirt? I think you would have gotten 25 out of 25 in terms of in that locker room, but you know, what have you. Mark, things that I'm looking for San Jose and everything. I want to see the Rapids be good on the ball. Austin had 60% possession against San Jose. So similar to how they've started games of being really intense and being good on the ball, did that a little bit against LAFC, did that very much so against a weakened Inter Miami side. I would not be shocked if Chris Armas's plan going into San Jose is play that game like you're the home team and you only have one win in seven games. And I need to see more quality, Mark, in the final third. The Rapids need to turn getting into good situations, into actual shot attempts, and then shot attempts that lead to something on goal. I have to think, given the state of San Jose's defense, given the fact that, you know, Wilson wasn't in the game, given the fact that William Yarbrough, as much as we love him, Mark, we know that his shot stopping is not his biggest strength. I need to see the Rapids be able to disorganize San Jose on the ball, in possession, in their set formation, and do that in a way that then leads to chance creation. And fundamentally, Mark, that means that the wingers, who have done a really good job of getting space but then dribbling into a defender and turning the ball over, have to do better. Georgi Mihailovic has to have his best game on the ball in not a lot of space in order to create chances. And fundamentally, they have to finish their chances. This needs to be, even if it's a 1-0 win, Mark, this has to be a game that on the performance or on just the, you know, what it looked like and what it felt like was a comfortable domination of a weak team. The underlying metrics of possession and shot attempts and XG and touches in the final third and touches in the box, they have to vastly outperform San Jose in this one. Regardless of all of that, Mark, because I still don't have a lot of confidence in the finishing, I am going to say that it is a 1-0 win for the Colorado Rapids on Saturday. And I'm not even going to predict a goal score because I think it's going to be such a broken play. It's going to be a fortuitous opportunity rather than it's going to be Navajo or Mihailovic getting onto an opportunity that gets blocked or gets deflected and then leads to a garbage goal from an unsung, unexpected goal scorer that ends up getting the result for the Rapids. But I do think the Rapids win this game. Mark, give me a prediction. Give me a goal score.
2-1 Rapids. It's a little bit tighter than you think, but they are going to win this game. I mean, I think that the biggest challenge of this match is it's on the road. And I think the team has been on the road a little bit. So that's a bit of a worry for these Rapids. But, you know, they're rounding into form. I think they should feel like a lot of confidence. And I think they're probably at that phase where a bunch of different players on the field, like they're hungry. They want the goal. They're going to feel a little bit more, you know, aggressive. I think like players like Sam Vines, who have been a little bit underperforming, Rafael Navajo and Darren Yappe, they're really hungry and they want to get things done. Kamani Stewart-Baines also, he had a great assist a couple weeks ago, but it's time for him to kind of like get his goal, I think. So that's kind of a nice thing. A big possibility, you know, coming into this. Jonathan Lewis has been hurt, so maybe he bounces back and gets into this match too. Matt doesn't think so, but
I think he's unavailable for selection this week. Mark, still
gotcha. So, but you know, like there's a couple guys who need to come back in. So,
and we're also approaching, Mark, I believe this Saturday will be 1 week left on the timeline that we were given on Connor Ronan. Obviously it's a Monday, so there was no training today. I haven't been out to training, but I'm really curious to see, does Ronan fully participate in training? Since you brought him up, Mark, and everything, what would you do in terms of, do you think Kamani Stewart-Baines is earned to start? And what would you do in the double pivot in terms of Bassett, Diok, Ollie LaRoz, and let's assume for the sake of that conversation, Mark, that Ronan is still unavailable.
I mean, I think if it ain't broke, right? I think that the Cole Bassett experiment as alongside Ollie LaRoz has been pretty good. I eventually kind of came around to the idea that this is the right way to go. My platonic ideal at defensive midfielder is more defensive than Armas has been going with, although I think LaRoz being freed up to do a little bit more roaming and attacking is kind of a fun idea. Also having him as a forward destroyer as opposed to a deep lying destroyer might be a fun thing. By that, I mean, if Jasper Lofelson was healthy, I'd put him in a defensive midfielder. He's not, I don't think. I think he's going to be out it sounds like beyond when Connor Ronan is ready. So there aren't a lot of options there. I think the only other option there is Lamine Diak. And you know, if Armas is really all about giving young guys a chance, then maybe this is the week. Maybe this is the first week that he gets to start there. Bassett moves up. I thought Omer Fernandez had a pretty good game against Miami. He was, you know, he looked threatening. He got knocked down once and earned a good free kick. He had two offsides that were both good reaction plays and were kind of heads up. I think he's just waiting for his moment also. So he's a kid I really like. And I have kind of grown to understand that he's the best. I think at the beginning of the season, I was like, oh, he should be a backup 10. And I think actually playing him as a wide midfielder has been really, really good. He's getting a feel for it. So, but I think giving him a rest, letting Bassett come back in up to the front line might be a good shout. Mihailovic out on the wing, Bassett in the middle, or vice versa. Or let him flip from every 20 minutes, like we've seen Rapids do in the past from wings.
I agree with you, Mark. I think the Rapids are going to need to be good on the ball, and they're going to expect to have more of the ball in this game. So for those reasons, I think you run out Ollie and Cole again in the double pivot. The thing that I've been most impressed with Stewart-Baines has been his link-up play, particularly in the final third. So where Bassett does a lot of stuff in terms of winning the ball back in... Oops, sorry for hitting my pop filter. Hopefully that sound didn't sound weird. So where Bassett is now doing a good job of doing midfield stuff in the midfield, but then doing stuff in the final third, I think you need more. You're not going to have as much space, I think, for Omer Fernandez to run into in transition with the way San Jose is going to play. So you need guys who are going to be able to work really hard, gang and press, win the ball back, and then do good link-up play in tight spaces. And I can't believe I'm saying this, Mark. I think that means Kevin Cabral on the left and Kamani Stewart-Baines on the right. And then if the game gets stretched, then you bring on an Omer Fernandez, a Calvin Harris, a Darren Yappe, potentially. But I think those guys are on the benchmark, and I think you have Lamine Diak again on the bench, and I think you hope really, really by the 60th minute you've got a lead to then have Diak come on probably for Ali in order to make a defensive substitution to then see out the game. I think that's the perfect situation, but you know, I will end up seeing what Chris Armas does with the game. Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96Podcast. We're also on Facebook. You should follow us on Facebook. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you can find Mark's written work, where you can pay to become a Highliner, and also start to get the various merch options that we have talked about on this episode. And then email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. That you can send us your questions there, or you can post them on social with the hashtag AskHTHL. Rate, review, share, subscribe. I met 3 Rapids fans, Mark, on my flight back to Miami, and I hit them up and I said, hey, were you at the game? I was at the game. And it's like, yeah. Oh, what section you were in? Oh, I was in the press box. I write for Burgundy Wave, and I do a podcast called Holding the Highline. Oh, I've never heard of that. So tell the Rapids curious friends that you have in your life about us, so that they can better understand the team and then maybe help grow the media space that we have going on here at HTHL. Listeners, we will see you next week, hopefully after a win against San Jose. Messi, Messi.
Dale, dale. Peace.